Good evening. This is Rabbi Mayefsky. We have a switch this week only for me and Rabbi Levine. I'm busy tomorrow night, so we traded places. The parasha this week begins, strangely enough, exactly where last week left off. And what I mean by is after the situation that Pinchas generated, of course, to save Klal Yisrael from any further damage, from any other thing, God says to Moshe, Nikom Nikmas B'nai Yisrael, he wants to Tzororos and Midyonim, he wants us to do a little saber rattling, but also take revenge. God is telling B'nai Yisrael to take revenge for themselves, and Moshe is telling them to take revenge for God. And it's a mutual experience. But the fact remains here that something very interesting that I didn't say last week because it's relevant to this week's parsha. And Moshe, when he's told that he better set things straight, set up to appoint Yehoshua officially to be the next leader, and God tells Moshe, V'losiyeh adas Hashem katzon asher ein lohem roeh, I want you to appoint somebody so that they don't have one day without a leader who could do the job that I did to take my place. And Moshe then says to God something that's very interesting, which plays a great role. He says, only you, God, can appoint all these people, asher yetzei lifneihem v'asher yavol lifneihem. What does that mean? What is the underlying reference that Moshe is saying with those words? Those who will go out to battle and those who will come back. Well, we hope everybody does. But the fact remains, we don't know that. There's only one person who knows that, God. There are soldiers who maybe don't come back from battle. Usually under normal circumstances, there are casualties. And God says to Moshe, Moshe says to God, if we're going to appoint people, new leaders, the new 12 leaders of each tribe, and we're going to appoint a leader to take Klal Yisrael and he's going to lead them into battle, then only you could appoint somebody who you know is going to go out to battle and will be coming home alive and well and able to continue his mission. And that is what Moshe means when he tells them that. And now, if we notice right away at the beginning, after they are instructed to go out to battle, to take a minor expeditionary force almost, imagine 12,000 soldiers from among 603,000 able-bodied men, to take only 12,000 is to show, to magnify the miracle. But when we see we do that, he also appoints 12 new leaders of the tribe, because one of them is somebody that we're obviously very well acquainted with, Kalev ben Yefuneh. But why is Kalev the only one? Because he was the one, Yehoshua and Kalev were involved in this mission, would be the only two from the old generation who would be survivors of the people who go out to the battle. The 12, the other tribe members, their fathers had died. And as they're going out to war, God is telling Moshe to choose these people in particular, because these will be the people who will survive the battles that will be now and later on too as well, that they will all survive the next few years at the very least. These will be the leaders even after they go into Israel, because I know that these are survivors. They are not going to die. That is something only God can do, which is very interesting when it comes to do that. And we notice, if you take a look at the names of the 12 leaders, that they're mostly, all called Nasi, except for three. And for those three people, Kalev and two others from two other tribes, because they were so well known that everybody would know that they're automatically, everybody knows, these are leaders. Basically, we know a lot of times who the leaders are amongst us. These are the people who will always rise to the occasion. And then there are some people that have to be given a title, and until they're given that title, we don't know. But I entitled the shiur tonight, War and Its Aftermath. And for the very simple reason is, the parasha in Matos begins very interesting with a new law that up until now, we have no clue up to this point what it was all about. And all of a sudden, Moshe tells, after all these laws that we've been given, Moshe tells them, listen, if somebody should make a promise in your family, and within 24 hours, if it's somebody, your wife or your child, not you, because you, when you say something, there's nobody that can abrogate a promise that you make. You know full well what you're doing, being of sound mind and body, but we want one voice to emanate from each family. And if your wife or your child makes a promise, and they're minors, then you have the ability within that day to abrogate and say, this promise that you made is null and void, because there are a lot of factors that you maybe not are, you are not aware of, or that it's something you will not be able to maintain because you haven't lived long enough to understand the world and what you actually, the ramifications of things that you said are too impossible for you to do. But why say it suddenly now? We've had so many halakhos up to now, and why do that? Well, one thing is that some of the mafarshim would like to speculate and say that Moshe did not want the people to think that they could make promises and just not keep their word, because hence be up to now at this point in time, we've had a few times that we've said, God wants you to know that when you say something and you make a promise in any way, shape, or form, you're duty-bound to keep your word. There's no room to wiggle out in any kind of a deal. And of course, we learn in the Gemara of Bava Metzia and Ezel Nesha that there's a curse on anybody who says he makes a deal with somebody and then for whatever reason he feels he can't keep it and backs out. There is a curse, even though you maybe legally have the right to do it, there's always that curse that God puts upon you according to the Gemara in Ezel Nesha, which is very interesting in Azov as well, of course. But nevertheless, these are the things that we're up against. But now Moshe feels that since it's only a few months until he dies, he's not sure exactly when, but now he has to come forth with many laws. And why tell a lot of laws we're going through when we notice, when we get into Devarim, when we start to read Sefer Devarim, we get into, after we finish with Akev, we begin with Re'eh, we have so many new laws that we henceforth have not seen, but also we have a lot of laws that we have heard. But as we mentioned before, when Yisro gave Moshe a lot of instructions and said that you have to appoint people and to hear them, you don't have a chance to minaboker out of Orev. You don't have the time or the ability to listen, to talk to all these people constantly from day to night. It'll wear you out. But Moshe is thinking one thing now. I'm talking to a new generation. And while I've told a lot of these laws previously to the older generation, these new people haven't heard it directly from me. And it's very important because all the missteps that they make, that their fathers and grandfathers have made up to this point, this new generation, they need to hear it from me directly. And that's very important, to hear it from their mouth. I could tell you something that one of my great rebbeim, imagine if I would repeat something that Rabbi Moshe Feinstein told me many years ago and give you a Dvar Torah, it may impress you, but imagine if you were able to hear it directly from him, it has a whole different feel and it affects you in a whole different way. And that's why Moshe is repeating, and eventually when we get to Sefer Devarim, he's going to repeat a lot of laws, and you say, why are we repeating so many things? But Moshe understands the need to hear it directly from Moshe Rabbeinu. It has a different feel coming directly from the horse's mouth, so to speak, not to use a phrase that we're acquainted with. But the point is, you're hearing it directly from Moshe, it has an effect on you. And that's what we want. And he tells us the other factor in making the vows, to abrogate the vows, because we're well aware of the fact that since they're going out to a major battle now, and he hasn't told them that before because those things came upon them, but now this is going to be a war that God is telling them in advance, I want you to generate this war, to instigate the war because they started up, and now you're working for my honor that they killed so many people. I want you to go out to battle. And now people are nervous. And we see that for one simple reason. One of the reasons that were looking, the Bnei Yisrael have been told that this is their 40th year and they know they're about to go into the land. And now suddenly they're faced with a new battle and they're going into war and they're asking for volunteers. Imagine, they have to ask for volunteers. And these 12,000 people are the ones who are willing to risk their lives, to put their lives on the line. Most of the people are backing off. Most of the people are saying, I'm not ready, I don't want to. But we see that. That's why sometimes in two countries, they need a draft. But, you know, you have a volunteer army. You have to thank the people who actually are actually volunteering. Now, these are 12,000 volunteers who were willing to put their life on the line for Klal Yisrael, and they deserve all the glory for what happens. They deserve our praise. And these are the leaders that took them, these new 12 Nesiim. But also what comes along with going out to battle under these conditions, you now normally somebody says, you sit down, you open up, you know, when you go on a long trip and you say, it's Tfilas HaDerech, may you return. And that's what these people are doing. You're making deals with God. It's like Yaakov when he was at the Sulam and he says, Im Yel or Kimi Madi, you know, and God promised him that I will be with you and I will take you and you will come home. V'shapti v'shalom or Beis Aviv or Yo Hashem Li L'Elokim. Yaakov makes a deal with God, so to speak. And you make the same deals. People, before they go into battle to risk their lives, are saying, God, please let me come home safe and sound to my family, and I'll be good, I'll be better, I'll do things, I'll do this, I'll go to minyan three times a day, or whatever it is, I'll daven more slowly, I'll do mitzvot, I'll do more gemilas chasadim, or whatever the case may be, I'll give tzedakah more, whatever it is. But you make promises, and unfortunately, too many times, we're not able to keep those promises. So when the promises get too much, and we know why you said it, if you step forward and you're saying things that it's impossible for you to keep, and you only made it under certain conditions, and then God wants you to know, Moshe says, it's time, I told you, there are certain conditions that somebody could make a promise, and not to say get out of it with wiggle room, but it's legal because we understand the reason is that you didn't know all the consequences of what you said in the heat of the moment. And now they are ready to go to battle. And when they go to battle, it's an unbelievable scenario. 12,000 people go out, and not only do 12,000 soldiers return, but all 12,000 soldiers return safe and sound and unharmed. Unfortunately, not necessarily unfortunately, but this serves as a major test. And the test is very simple. They come back with tremendous amounts of booty. And one thing that we saw, it says, Osam the Es Pinchas. Why in the world would God send Pinchas along? Because as we know, the reason that Pinchas was able to do the Avodah and God only appointed him officially as a Kohen in this, at the point that we have last week, was that had he killed Zimri after he had officially been announced and listed as a Kohen, he would be puzzled to do the Avodah. And here it is, now that Pinchas has been considered, and now God made him a Kohen forever after, and now Moshe is sending him out to battle. What happens now if he ends up killing somebody? But that's the point. God was making all these things that he would not have to do all these things, that he would just be there as a leader, and he would be one of those people who would definitely serve as a spearhead, not to, no pun intended, but to lead the crowd, because he was obviously a man of great courage, and they needed that person who saved so many people to spearhead, to lead the charge against Midian. And that's what his purpose was. Unfortunately, again, a mistake is made. And when they come home and after God tells them to take revenge for everything, what is the one thing that they neglect to do? What was the reason that they had to go to the war with Midian? Because of the sin of Cozbi, the licentiousness that they had with the women, 24,000 Jews died. And while they killed the men Who did they bring home? We understand on some level some of the children. Certainly, it's hard to imagine. It's very difficult to put ourselves in those shoes and have to slaughter men, women, and children. And they bring home some women. And God says, what? And Moshe says to them, what was the purpose of your mission? Was to avoid having these women amongst you because they led you astray and they caused 24,000 deaths. And God sent you to take revenge for that. So who do you choose to bring home? Women? Where was the seichel? But he's yelling only at the leaders because it's the leaders that were responsible, the same way that Shaul was held responsible for not wiping out the entire Amalek as he did by bringing home Agog, and look what happened from there. And Moshe instructs them. Moshe is livid at them, but at the leaders. And he says, but now you're going to have to do it. Now it's going to be not in the heat of the battle. Now it's going to have to be cold-blooded murder. And this is very difficult situation. But guess what? So the parasha has to go on and tell us what happens to people who have to experience all this death, destruction, and mayhem. Besides all the booty that they brought home and all the things that they have to kasha, we'll leave that for another time. But the fact is, it cheapens life. Somebody who is killed multiple times, unfortunately, life becomes cheap. And so in Parshas Maaseh, we have to go through all the laws of killing somebody accidentally. What is actually called an accident? We've had this before, but now it's down to the nitty-gritty. They've actually been through the wars. Before, when we had it in previous parashas, all about Ari Miklot, we didn't get into it to that in Mishpatim. We didn't get into it in great detail about what's considered shogeg, oz, yeshogeg korov lemezid, shogeg korov leones, or an onus itself. Who gets to go to Ori Miklat, who doesn't? And what is considered Ori Miklat, especially after Pinchas had killed Zimri and gotten away with it, we start to think that perhaps, you know, well, I had a good reason for killing him. Really? Why? And God has to set forth, and Moshe has to tell him now, all the laws pertaining to what is going to be considered, because life becomes cheap. And this becomes a major problem. We have that sequence of events that the Torah, Moshe is giving us all these things. But the fact remains, one might ask the question, or certainly I ask myself, when God made the promise to Avraham Avinu that he would, you know, and you will now, you will die peacefully, but in 400 years, the B'nai Israel will go into the land of Eretz Yisrael, and they will be free from slavery, and they, you will inherit the land. Well, when somebody inherits, does that necessarily entail war? Does it ever? When you have an inheritance, do you have to fight for it? It's given to you legally. You earned it by your 400 years of servitude, by your 210 years of Mitzrayim. But God knows one thing right now. Easy come, easy go. And the Mitzrayim, they've had it all. If they had given their total faith in Emunah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we know the Gemara tells us they would have been able to go into the land peacefully and taken over the land. But the fact remains that even with all the things that God gave them, the water from a rock and the manna from heaven and the clothing and all the benefits that they had, even though they were sojourning in the Midbar for 40 years, they could never appreciate something that was handed to them on a silver platter, that they needed to be one thing in more than one thing, but one thing in particular, they needed to earn it. Somebody who earns and works very hard for something is more likely not to want to give it up. And God knows that they have to go into Eretz Israel and fight for it. And if they're willing to risk life and limb to have this possession that God promised them, even though it was seemingly on the surface the promise to Abraham was without a war, certainly that was what they must have thought when they left Mitzrayim. I don't think that they thought they were going to have to do battle for 7 years before they were able to apportion the land. So now what's going to happen? But you didn't deserve to have it handed to you. You're going to have to fight for it. And not only that, one of the reasons that Moshe had to leave them, because up to now, if everything, anything, it all went wrong, Moshe came to their defense and spoke up to God and made shalom between God and Bnei Israel for all their missteps. And God knows one thing. There's a time in one's life when you grow up and you're responsible for your own actions, regardless of what they may be. And God is saying, I'm taking Moshe away from you because I need you to be accountable for all your own actions. So unfortunately, it's down to you. And that's what Moshe is telling Klal Yisrael later. I could have taken you in, but because of your missteps, I can't go, because God needs you to, God needs to see if you could stand up for yourselves, work hard for what you get and appreciate it, and know that you did it while it was with my help. But Moshe wasn't there to intercede from you. Yoshua being a distant second to pray for Klal Yisrael, but nevertheless, somebody who would lead them and be there and survive all the battles. But the soldiers who volunteered deserve so much of the credit that did all these fightings. And that's why in so many countries, it rankles me to such a great degree that people, especially in nowadays when a lot of our countries that have volunteer army, we have to thank God that we don't have a draft. And we take a look at these soldiers and we give them a hard time. But they come back and life becomes cheap to people who see battle. I've seen it through my, you have a different attitude about life once you've been through the wars. And the Israeli soldiers who defend the land, that they've seen death and destruction. It's amazing the difference between an Israeli soldier and an American soldier, certainly. But nevertheless, it cheapens life. And God is still there to give us that Ori Mikvah, because I know that under normal circumstances, if your life had been a peaceful one and you didn't have to go to battle, these things probably, life would have been more sacred to you and all of these things never would have happened. But we have to give a lot of latitude to people who are willing to put their life on the line. Moshe, of course, he put his life on the line for 40 years, actually for his entire life, but that's how he was brought up. And these people who have been suffering in the Midbar for their major part of their life, if not all of their life, for some of them, they are willing to put their life on the line for Klal Yisrael. And to them, when they're sharing the booty, God says that they get half, the rest goes for the people. And what do the people who are staying at home, why do they deserve any of the booty? Because hopefully when the Israeli soldiers that we say today, and we say tilim for people when there's a battle and we hope and pray, that accounts for something. And that accounts for at least 10% of what they have accomplished by while they're fighting our battles. We are home davening for their safety. And for that, we'll give them 10%. May we see the wisdom of the Torah constantly. God has a cheshbon about every little thing, and it makes all the sense in the world. If the rest of the world would see the wisdom of the Torah, we would have a different world. Have a good evening and a good Shabbos.